Welcome to the Healing the City podcast. The following podcast is a ministry of the Village Church in Tucson, Arizona. If you wish to support the Healing the City podcast, you can go to the show notes, click support the show, and you can become a subscriber for $3, $5, or $10 a month. This will help offset the hosting costs and continue the ministry of Healing the City podcast. Also, if you wish to support the show, we really encourage you to rate us on Apple and Spotify and other places that podcasts are listened to, and give us a good review. Thanks.
There's often stuff that you think is making noise on the podcast that isn't.
Yeah, that's true.
The wire that comes loose or the thing outside or whatever is usually not as loud out there as it is in here. Mm-hmm. Okay, Mark's voice is now
he's so quiet. He'll start talking loud.
I can hear you guys. I'm having trouble hearing myself, but that's
fine. He's still, his lines are a lot smaller than mine right now.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it. I don't mind it. I'll be quiet.
I'll be quieter.
The last podcast, I sounded louder than everybody, but it might just be because my voice is like a higher pitch than everybody's. Mm. So every time I started talking, it sounded like my voice was like...
I didn't notice that when I listened to
popping
it.
Out.
I think that's just you.
That's just you.
Very possible.
That's just you.
Might just me being self-conscious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
It's just you. Because I'm already self-conscious on podcasts.
Well, this is the... awkwardly vulnerable confession time.
Yay.
Welcome to the Healing the City podcast.
We love to be awkward.
My name is Pastor Eric, or Pastor Solo, is it?
Pastor Eric Solo. Pastor Mark Kenobi.
Kenobi. And Pastor Susan Leia. Or what? Argana. Susan Argana.
That would save, I would still have to wear the buns.
You still have to. We got them on Rats. Right now. With the headphones, you look perfect. So, Aizen said to me afterwards that Maywa, you know, she wanted to do the very last Kid Vespers because she's aging out. Mm-hmm. And he told her that that was too bad because she missed the sermon of the century.
Oh, snap.
So
and I was like... wow, I just, like, a 12-year-old just told me I preached the sermon of the century. And the century's kind of, it's 24 years in, so that's a pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's a pretty good.
So I think we should explain that to our listeners who have not heard the sermon from Sunday.
So you launched your sermon by giving the Star Wars-style recap of everything that's happened in John so far.
Yes.
That was nice.
Which was awesome.
My favorite part is the bottom line, where it really gets into the more, sounds more like Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. So that this is, what's going to happen?
Right.
Like, where is this story going?
Yeah. I didn't get the music. When I practiced it, nobody was controlling the music. So, you know, when that goes and then you get the little.
Sure.
And then the screen scrolls down. Yeah. It's like, oh.
We lost that part.
I lost that part.
But it was still the sermon of the century.
It still was.
So then Aizen drew
the Millennium
Falcon and put your name as...
And put me in the cockpit.
Oh.
Yeah.
Pastor Eric Solo flying the Millennium Falcon.
Well, good.
The Star Wars reference clearly made an impact because Bentley also drew Chewbacca.
Yeah. So the point of it was simply... Well, part of it was to talk about the shift that happens in John chapter 12, mm-hmm. and how dramatic it is to have Lazarus raised from the dead and to have all the pressure and relief that Mary and Martha must have experienced in the death of Lazarus and all their sorrow just to be completely reversed and everything's mm-hmm. good, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the tension is done.
Yeah.
Jesus defeats death. And yet, Chapter 12 begins to disrupt us, and if we're just reading, we're like, oh no, things are going really bad. They're going to go really bad.
Yeah.
And people are out to kill Lazarus, who was just raised from the dead.
Right, so we've got that moment, yeah. But we have, yeah, so John 12 is packed full of things. So we have the theme of the sermon, Mary washing the feet of Jesus.
Yep.
So the awkwardly vulnerable thing. But then we have Jesus marching into Jerusalem on a donkey.
Hosanna.
We have the Hosanna proclamation. We have a whole conversation about the Son of Man and death and life. And then we have a prophetic utterance out of Isaiah that I didn't spend that much time about, basically talking about how God closed the ears and eyes of the people so they wouldn't believe, but some do, and but they're afraid to tell anybody. So that's kind of the summary of it all.
And you talked about awkward vulnerability.
Yes.
As like the base theme of like the whole chapter, basically. Mm-hmm. This awkward vulnerability. Here's Mary in the middle of everybody washing Jesus's feet with her hair and perfume and her tears, and then here's Jesus riding on a colt while everyone's cheering for him, knowing that they're gonna cheer for his death in a few days, and here's, you know, here he is talking about how he's going to be glorified and no one's understanding him. And there's this.
Well, there's this cool cryptic thing in there that I let people kind of try to figure out on their own, which is Jesus. When the Greeks show up, Jesus says to them, "Oh, my hour has come."
Yeah.
And the kernel has to fall. Lest it fall, it needs to die, and then it's going to spring up and spread its fruit.
Yeah.
It has to fall off and die. And so I was like, all right, everybody, I'm not going to explain this, but look at Genesis 3 and 12 and see if you can figure out what's happening here.
So you want to draw that out?
We could chat about it a bit if you want. I'll let you guys guess.
Pastors. So somebody asked me on Sunday what it meant, and I said, I don't know.
Oh, no.
But
no one talked to me about it.
People talk to me about it.
Well, when I said I don't know, they were like, well, you're his wife. Haven't you talked to him about it? And I said, no, but I told him people would be really angry if he said that. So my guess was Genesis 12 is the promise to Abram at that point,
mm-hmm.
that all nations would be blessed through him.
By his seed.
So, okay. I missed that part when I read it.
I think it's there.
Okay. Yeah. But yeah, so I was, yeah. So the offspring being Jesus, if he falls into the ground as that seed, blesses all nations.
And
the introduction of the Greeks into the story is an indication that all nations have arrived to see what's about to happen.
And Genesis 3 is, you will bite at his heel and he will crush your head.
Right. Or the seed of the woman will.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful passage, this is proclamation about who Jesus is, going back to the world will be blessed through him and he will crush the head of the snake, and those two ideas as he's walking towards his death. It's great.
It's interesting because it really confronts you with, oh, John is writing a play. I mean, it really is. I'm thinking I'm in a kid's play and I'm sitting there and then, or, you know, it's at a play, but the kids are the Greeks. So they come marching out, stumbling. Hey, we want to see Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that's the turning. It's a comedy, and yet it's the turning point of everything.
Well, it is. It is very much if you turned John into a play, your intermission, your act break would be after John 11.
So right.
Lazarus would be resurrected. Everyone's standing there looking at him going like, whoa, like unwrap him. He's unwrapped. There's this joyful proclamation. And then the curtains go.
Yeah. It ends just like Star Wars.
And then it says intermission. Mm-hmm. And then you're sitting there and when it comes up, there's the guy walks out and says, okay, here's where we are. We're at Mary and Martha's house.
Having dinner.
And Lazarus, who is resurrected, and we're having dinner, and this is the scene. And then, you know, the curtains open, and then you've got the rest of the play, which is a lot of dialogue, a lot of Jesus giving these sermonettes about things and praying for people and the activity of the last week.
Yeah.
And you get a hint at the end of John 11 that something is going to go awry. because the high priest
yeah.
says it is better for one to die than the whole nation to come undone.
Yeah.
And he doesn't realize he's prophesying, right. which is also similar to a play in that era.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's all of that, but the theme of the sermon is this awkward vulnerability
yeah.
displayed by Mary, very countercultural, very a very vulnerable moment. Then we have Jesus kind of highlighting what that looks like in his own vulnerability, and then an invitation for us to follow him in servanthood, like love and hate of our life, and where Jesus is, we will be and be honored by God. The Father, if we follow. So there's this invitation for us to let go of control. And then the last part, it seems that the text you can kind of pull out is, okay, but the thing that Jesus is inviting us into and what vulnerability looks like is for him to be the one who defines us and really defines what we're about. So with that, I gave a whole bunch of suggestions as to what that might look like practically now.
Yeah.
But I did also make a contrast, and I think Jesus does in that text about light and dark, that in the darkness, there is no vulnerability, right? In the light is, and I think you brought that out. Exposure is what happens when you step into the light. That,
yeah.
And so just the very nature of following Jesus is awkwardly vulnerable because it's constantly exposing who we are
yeah.
and our motives and inviting us into something different. So anyway,
well, then Mary seems wholly unconcerned with the conversation that's going on around her.
Yes.
She is just like, no, I'm doing this. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm doing this thing for Jesus.
Right. So interestingly enough, just some of the background to that is that a Jewish wife is expected to wash the face of her husband and to wash the feet of her husband. Those are the duties of the wife. So she chooses a very wifely space in taking care of Jesus, which is an interesting thing.
Well, the washing of the feet is really, it comes around in a lot. I don't remember exactly where it is. There's one where
it's in Luke.
Is it in Luke where he says you did not offer to wash my feet?
It's either Simon the Pharisee.
Yeah, Simon the Pharisee, yeah. Where he says you did not offer to wash my feet, but this woman has not stopped washing my feet with her tears since I came in. Mm-hmm. There's this whole idea of like when you receive a guest, like hospitality
mm-hmm.
is to wash their feet. Mm-hmm. Because when you're walking around in the first century, you're walking around in, especially in cities, you're walking around in the dirt and the the muck and the animals. And
it's stuff. Just gross.
And it's gross. And so you go into someone's house and they're going to wash your feet for you. So there's this hospitality piece that's happening, that's caring for the person. And then Jesus washes the feet of his disciples and steps into that role, awkwardly vulnerable with his disciples.
Right, which is going to happen
soon. I think
which is going to happen soon.
Interesting in both of those accounts is that it's, like you were saying, it may not have been awkward for Mary, even though it was vulnerable. But it was sure awkward for everybody else.
Oh, yeah. Everyone else is like, what's happening?
Yeah.
Right.
So, well, I mean, it doesn't seem awkward for Jesus either. Although I've had my feet washed by other people before in foot washing ceremony kind of spaces. And it's very awkward to receive mm-hmm. to me.
Yes.
I mean, partly I'm not culturally present to it, but also there were cultural kind of boundaries around it where there were specific people who would offer you that, and then that became normal. But for somebody else to do it would be really uncomfortable. So I feel like that's part of it, is not just the vulnerability of the person taking an action, but also maybe it's awkward for them or not, but it's probably going to be awkward for the people around them.
Right. So I feel like one of the things that we have to realize, I mean, I didn't tease this out, but in first century like culture, it's much more shared. Like even your intimacy with one another is shared. So when they're having this party, you know, people know it. So they're all out in the courtyards. Like people are always hanging around the house of the person where Jesus is at, but they're not invited to the party. It's just, but people don't kick them out either. They're just, everybody's around. Everybody kind of knows everybody's business, what's happening, mm-hmm. you know, all those kinds of things. It's hard to be as private as we imagine that there's a lot of privacy. Well, there is no real privacy. Well, going and
that's come up before in John, where we have these moments where like, oh, Jesus is having this intimate conversation with this person. Then you're like, oh no, there's like a ton of people around.
Right.
Them. Mm-hmm. Like noticing those details are really interesting.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting when you, in the evening service, when you went and listed all the things mm-hmm. to do, to be awkwardly vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
When you said, what was the, it was a, ask for help, even if you don't need it. And there was this audible, what? In the crowd. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because like, I don't need my kids' help unloading the dishwasher.
No.
I don't. Mm-hmm. I may not want their help. Like, I can unload the dishwasher. You know, there are times at church where I ask kids to do things with me just to have them come do something and stop what they're doing and stop running around or stop being
sure
doing whatever. Like, I'm like, all right, like, hey, come with me to do this thing. I don't need their help. I can do the thing by myself. Yeah. But there's something about, especially with my kids, saying, hey, come unload the dishwasher with me. That's like hard for me because they're not good at it, but mm-hmm. then they get to be with me. They get to learn from me. They get to help me do it. I get to say, no, don't touch the knife. Okay. Hold this, bring it to me. All those kinds of things. There's a learning that comes along with that.
Sure.
Of how to help you in a way that's
how to,
eventually becomes helpful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is, I mean, a lot of that is about discipleship in the kingdom and, hey, come with me to, I think about Rod has a story about the person he was being discipled by saying, hey, come with me to visit this lady in the hospital or something.
Right.
And
sure.
That being really awkwardly vulnerable for him.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, those are good. Good thoughts. I what I was thinking would be a nice little short podcast series for us to do is, as we're going along doing this John thing, we could also just take each one of those as a separate podcast, awkwardly vulnerable things to do, and flesh them out and talk about them so that people could kind of have some things to get anchors to,
mm-hmm.
you know, to practice them.
Yeah.
So I think that would be good.
That sounds awkwardly vulnerable.
That sounds awkwardly vulnerable. So I enjoyed the sermon. It was fun. I'll tell you, preaching on 50 verses is, you know, all this, it's a big.
It's a lot.
It's a big task.
Well, there's a lot of separate stories in this. They all kind of draw together, but there's a lot of different things to talk about in a passage like
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think a couple of our sermons so far have been like really tied together well because the whole chapter is one story.
Mm-hmm.
This chapter is kind of like, all right, this thing happens, this thing happens, this thing happens, and you're trying to figure out how to tie it, all those things together, and that's
right.
That's always a little harder.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I keep telling Sue, if you're going to do the synoptic gospels, there's not as much. There's a lot of depth, but it's a whole different depth. It's not a literary thing. And, I mean, you can preach very like preachy sermons, but when you're doing John, it's you're doing. It feels like you're in English class, and you're doing a lot of literary analysis to figure out what's happening within the text. And then you don't preach sermons on literary analysis. You try to get people into the story and figure out what the characters' motivations are and why they're doing what they're doing and what's happening. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of layers.
And what the underneath message is, like mm-hmm. what's actually underneath here that everybody, that John's trying to get at, which is like 17 things, because John's a master of those things.
Oh, and then he tells you.
Yeah, but then the watcher just shows up and says, hey, this is what it's about, guys. At least this is the one thing you might want to know.
Yeah.
Judas is a thief.
And you'll have to figure out the other 16 things yourself.
Yeah. Cool.
Oh,
man. Well, I don't know. Do you guys have any other supplemental things for people in John 12?
I don't think so. It is the turn. I mean, this is the 11-12. You get the end of the end of the first act, the beginning of the second act.
Yeah.
There's the next like four, maybe not the next four chapters. I forget what 13 is, but at least 14, 15, 16 is a lot of like Jesus teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, like they, we get the abide in me and him praying for himself and for others. And there's, it's a lot of Jesus talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which will be fun.
Cool. Well, thank you, guys. This is awesome. John chapter 12.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you've got questions about John chapter 12 or any other part of John, you can email us at healingthecity@gmail.com. And as always, we will say you can like us in all spaces. Spotify, Apple, Google. I don't know where else to like us, but like us, review us, do all those good things. Thank you very much.